I think we can start. I'm Gabriele Latikainen, and I did my PhD studies here, and my defense, my public defense, will be in 2 weeks. And now I came to speak about my research topic, what I did, and or at least part of it. And I hope there will be something useful for you. In any case, you can just stop me and ask things, or you can just say that you already heard these things, and then I will skip the topics, because I'm not sure what were the topics in the last lectures. So I hope that everybody can just stop me and ask questions or comment on these. So I will speak about first some trends in the digital era, but you have been talking about this a lot, so I will just shortly explain them. And then this lecture will be about financial aspects of business models, so in particular what kind of costs and what kind of pricing digital goods and services have, so how they can be priced so that the companies would benefit the most and creating value for the customers. So first we will speak about pricing as a strategic capability of a firm. Then we go through different pricing model aspects, that what are the things that should be considered by companies when they price their services. And then some results of the research, that actually how companies nowadays price their digital goods and services. So what are the changes that the digitalization brought, and the cloud computing and the other emergent technologies brought to this industry. And then the second topic is related to the growing storage needs. So we have big data, lots of data. All the companies have really a huge amount of data to be stored. So they have to cope with this problem. They need some solution. And there are different factors that determine the choice, that what do they, what kind of solution they will choose, and we will go through this kind of cost considerations. And then the cost efficiency of different storage solutions, so basically that how can they determine that which storage solution is the most cost effective, so basically which is the cheapest. So these are the trends that and the era what we live today. I'm not sure if this picture is visible enough, but this is a kind of, I think it's a good picture describing that what are the changes that we can see nowadays in all the industries, because we really have a lot of emerging technologies and a lot of different trends going on that basically bring changes to all the industries and all the aspects of our world, also to businesses and also to customers and to our personal life. And one trend is the servitization. So nowadays everything is sold as a service. So there is security as a service and data as a service and so on. And customers basically demand that they don't just get a product, but they want some extra additional services so that their needs are fulfilled. There is the cloud computing that brought the changes. So this cloud computing basically describes both the technological changes like that are brought by the technology, like multi-tenancy and virtualization, configuration, and online or web service. And then also some changes in the business side. So basically everything is sold as a service now. And customers can search for information online, and they can basically buy everything online and so on. Then there is the big data. The big data is about having a huge mass of data everywhere. Basically, nowadays, we don't just store weekly data, but even daily or even hourly data. And this data can be used for many different things. But besides the volume of it, there are also other things which can be considered, like the variety. so the type and the nature of the data, because now we don't just store text, but also images and audio and video, and also the velocity. So big data is often available real-time, and this brings challenges and also opportunities. Then there is the IoT, the information of things, Internet of Things. So this is a network of the physical devices, vehicles, and other items. They are embedded with some software electronics, some sensors, and they are connected. So these objects can connect and exchange data. The artificial intelligence has been long time with us, but basically this is about machines that can just mimic the cognitive functions that humans have usually, for example, learning and problem solving. Then there is the blockchain. It is a disruptive technology, and now it starts to be important in every industry. It's basically a technology for decentralization. So there are a list of records. They are called blocks, and they are linked and secured, and using cryptography. And this is a huge possibility. It has a huge impact on all the businesses and all the industries, for example, starting from financial industries, but also in other parts. Then we were speaking about business models. We will speak about business models. Business models are basically a representation of a company or a tool that provides a picture of a firm's competitiveness. So basically, there is the business strategy, which is on the high level, on an abstract level, of the company that describes the visions that the company has. And then there is the operative implementation, so basically how things are implemented. And between these two, there is the business models. So basically, they describe that how the company organizes itself, operates, and creates values. And one aspect is that the business models, of course, change over time, and there are external and internal forces, so the change can come from inside the company, or it can come from external influences, so, for example, the technological trends or the market or the business environment induces changes that has to be implemented in the business models. There are different, in the literature, there are different structure. These business models, they have different components and different levels, but what is most important may be that there are the strategic components, like about the business strategy, the resources, the network. Then there are some components related to customer and market. Here belongs the value proposition and the revenues, and then value creation components, how the value is created and what kind of financial aspects it has. The financial aspects describe the company's profit or loss-making logics. They determine the firm's ability to survive its competition, and basically it describes that what kind of costs and what kind of revenue models the company has. So in the cost model, we basically think about all the cost factors that are needed to create the value for the customers. And related to revenue models, this is basically describes that, how the company gets the profit. So what kind of revenue sources there are, and how the revenue is collected. So let's see that what kind of aspects the pricing has related to the digital goods and services. When I speak about digital goods and services, this is basically here belongs many things, but what I mean is, for example, software as a service. So nowadays the software is not sold as a product, but it's sold as a service. It's something between the tangible goods and the intangible goods. It has also complementary services, so you can't say that it's just a good. So basically, digital goods and services, basically it's an umbrella term for many different type of services. So pricing is very important. I think everybody agrees with that. Companies really can make advantage of some unique pricing model. So if the competitors have the same same kind of value proposition, then pricing can be something which they can achieve some competitive advantage with. And because of these new challenges we were talking about, we have new trends. Because of these new trends, we have new challenges that the organizations face, and of course, new opportunities. But nowadays, we can agree that the pricing models are complex and difficult to compare. So if we are thinking about, for example, public cloud services, and we try to compare the pricing model of each, there are different packages, there are different layers, there are different complementary services. It's very difficult to say that which one is cheaper or which one is the most advantageous for the customer. And then they are not transparent. It's not easy to see all the hidden costs, for example. And why this pricing is even more difficult, it's because of the environment. So we speak about high velocity markets when the information is often unavailable or obsolete because there are so many fast changes in the demand or technology, or competitors have some new changes or regulations, for example, legal or the governmental regulations in the market. So basically, when we are speaking about pricing in this industry, then we have to think about processes which are just unstable, fragile, or semi-structured. So we don't have official processes that are there for many years, and we know that they are working. It's all the time changing, and the companies have to find new ways to price their services all the time and check that, and they should have some market sensitivity. So they should be able to answer this kind of changes very fast. And of course, like everything, the pricing process also has some costs, like physical, managerial, and customer costs. So pricing is important, but difficult and costly. But pricing is something that cannot be bought or outsourced from other companies. So all the companies have to, they shouldn't underestimate the pricing. They should really invest in developing this kind of capability in the firm. And different type of investments are needed. For example, the human capital, very important, that you have the right persons to price your service. So for this, you need skills and you need knowledge on different things. Then you should invest also in the IT systems and tools. So for example, there are different tools nowadays that can be used for following the changes in the markets, and also for comparing, for example, different competitors' offerings and so on, and they can be used, and and the company has to invest in these. And then there are also some investments needed in the communications and organizational culture. So it's very important that the employees know about the importance of pricing and how actually the digital service and good is priced. For example, if we are speaking about a software company, the developers usually in the past, they were just working with developing the software and so on. But nowadays, it's very important that they also know that how this software will be priced, because pricing might have some requirements regarding the software. It can inquire some kind of architectural changes. For example, pricing components have to be implemented in the software and so on. So there should be in the company, there should be a culture like that pricing aspects of the service what the company develops is basically open for everybody, and everybody can know about it. And pricing can be seen from organizational and micro-foundational perspectives. So of course, the organization can invest in developing this kind of pricing process, but on the other hand, at the end of the day, the managers are those who make the decisions. So basically, you can think about pricing from that perspective, that what kind of skills these decision makers should have in order to make well-informed decisions on pricing. And then the pricing capability of a firm has its own life cycle, so it's not bounded basically to the digital service that we price. So if a firm has the routines, it has the mechanics on how to price one digital service, then it will help also pricing the second digital service. So what kind of aspects should we consider? Of course, there are these cost-based pricing. So in the past, and also for these tangible goods, it's working very well that we are just calculating that how much cost do we have when we create this good, and then we just put some extra additional price on the top, and that is the cost-based pricing. But related to the digital services, it's more important it's more important that how the customer feels, that how much value does it create for the customer. So probably cost-based pricing is something that has to be considered. You cannot price something too low so that your costs are not refunded. But on the other hand, it's not enough. Then there are the competitor-based pricing. Of course, you have to know your competitors and the value propositions they offer. And they have to be taken into consideration. But in many cases, what we found out from research is now the digital goods and services industry is so different in the sense that companies usually have different value propositions. So basically, they don't just compete on price, but they have really different value propositions. They create different type of values for the customers. So it's not only the price what they compete on. And the value-based pricing is something that digital goods and services industry uses the most nowadays. So, of course, you have to know your costs, you have to know your competitors, but the value-based pricing is something that you really have to work on if you want to price your digital goods and services well. And, of course, the fourth one is performance-based pricing. So, basically, this is something when the risk is shared between the customers and the suppliers. So how much value your service brings to the customers and the customer pays after these benefits have realized. So basically, it's kind of a revenue share model. Then nowadays, with the emergence of software as a service, the subscription-based pricing or the software renting has been quite popular. Before that, when we were speaking about software products, we had just the license model. We have the perpetual license. The customers basically bought the right to use the bought basically the whole software. So they, but now they are just renting this kind of service, digital good or service. And this brings benefits both for providers and for customers. For providers, if they just rent the software, so this is about a monthly fee, basically, monthly or annual fee, basically the software is rented and the customers can use it. It gives only the right to the customers to use it for a fixed time of period. So for providers, this kind of renting may decrease the provider's transaction costs related to searches and quality assurance and software delivery, so you don't have to put your software in a box and deliver it to different shops, but you can just sell it over the internet. And then renting may also increase the positive network effect. So this means that if you have one customer, then most probably you will have a second one because the software is more available due to its delivery mode. So its customers will search it and will find it much faster. For customers, it also has some benefits. There are no initial costs or very low initial costs. So when they were buying a perpetual license, then probably that is something that you can call an investment because the price is so high. And then later they could decide that, okay, maybe this was not worse or was it worse. But now we don't have the initial costs. initial investment costs, but we have some low cost every month, and then the customer can decide if it continues or not. And also, if you buy a software product in the past, you had some hidden costs. So after you installed, probably you had some problems with it, and then you needed some extra capacity, for example, for the servers, or some IT personnel who knew how to install some extra services and so on. There are some hidden costs which were not visible when you made the decision to buy it. But with this kind of software renting, you don't have these. You just pay the monthly fee, and in case it's not working, then you just cancel. You don't need your own IT personnel and IT infrastructure, and you can just test or experience the software, or if in case you need it only for a short period, you can just pay a smaller fee instead of buying it. The other pricing aspect is the usage-based pricing. This means that customers are paid basically on the usage of the software, so how much resources they use. And this requires monitoring and measuring the usage, and also implies billing tasks, so it has some additional costs for the providers. And some studies found that the customers basically, they are willing to pay more for unlimited use, because they prefer to have usage-independent pricing models, because they just don't want to over or underestimate their usage, and basically their budget is much more estimatable. So one solution is combining renting and usage-based pricing. Then we can speak about price discrimination, which is also present in this digital goods and services industry. So basically the same product or service is offered to different customer segments at different prices. This can be this price discrimination have different types. So you can price your service differently for each customer if you want. Or you can just say that, okay, in Finland the price is like this, but in China it's different. Or you can just say that students have a different price. You can have different versions of the same service and different functionalities or different service levels. And then these kind of versions can have different pricing. And then you can give discounts, for example, on the time of the usage. For example, if you use the software during the night, then it's priced differently than using it in the same time with others. Or there are some quantity or quality-based discounts. Or you can just combine all these. But one thing is that too many versions may be confusing for customers and may increase the variable costs for the providers. So basically, you have to limit the price of the number of the different versions that you want to price separately. And this is good for providers, because if you think about it, there are different customer segments, they have different needs, and they can be offered different functionalities for these customer segments. So there are, this way they can basically have, they can reach different customer level segments with a lower willingness to pay. So they, in the end, they will have more customers. The other technique what nowadays is used is the packaging or bundling. This means that there are some different items, different functionalities of the good or the service that are bundled. This can be software components or IT services, human services, and so on. And then these packages are basically sold for the customers. And there is some cost savings, because you don't have to price everything separately and bill everything separately and deliver everything separately, but you can just sell everything in a package. We have different considerations regarding the influence of the customers on the price. So in case the company just decides that this is the price list and this is how we sell this service, then the customer basically doesn't have any influence on the price. But then we can have some negotiation power, This means that the customer can basically have some power in deciding that what he wants and how that is priced. This is usually used when there are some customization work. So the customer wants something really special. It doesn't want the standard service, but it wants something to be customized for his own purposes. And then it has some negotiation power also on the price. Then the third option is that when the price depends on some measurable result of the product or the service. So this is basically result-based pricing. So, for example, if one organization generates benefits in 1 month this much, then the price what he will pay for the provider is, let's say, 50%. Then there is the auction-based pricing. Here, the customers will decide on how much they want to pay for this service. And then there are the exogenous pricing, when the price depends on external circumstances beyond the customers' and providers' influence. So there are some external factors. For example, in case the provider uses some public cloud services and the public cloud provider has some pricing scheme, and then this provider charges the customers based on this public cloud provider's pricing scheme. That's kind of an exogenous pricing, because as a provider you can't have an influence on the public cloud provider's price. So basically you just pass on this kind of hosting fees to your customers. We are speaking about different pricing strategies. When we use the long-term real price strategy, that means that we have basically the same prices. We decide that we don't make big changes on the prices for a long term. As contrast to this, there is the penetration and the skimming. So penetration is when a company penetrates the markets, when it enters the first time, it might be that it offers the same service for a lower price, but then later, when he will have more customers, then just increases these prices. Or he might just decide that we will use the skimming, which means that first, when I enter the market, I know that the customers will just buy what I want, buy my service, and then they have a high price in the beginning, but later, when the customers are not interested so much, then they just decrease these prices. Then there are also other pricing strategies, for example, the free pricing model, that basically we offer this service for free for the customers, but then we get some revenues out of some complementary services. And then the random or periodic discounting. So organizations may decide on some random discounting or periodic discounting. For example, every month they have different discounts in the beginning, and that's a pricing strategy they should think about as an option. Here there is a tool for the companies. This basically what we were speaking about till now. There are really different options how the digital goods and services should be priced. And this is kind of a tool and the questions that what the companies could think about when they want to differentiate by price. So these are the things that they have to go through and think about it related to their own value proposition. And on the right side, there are the options that they should choose, they can choose from. So let's speak about how companies price their digital products and services today. This is some results of a research that basically checked the homepages of different cloud providers. This checked infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service offerings. And it found basically that the most used pricing strategies are the pure bundling, so basically they packaged their service. Then there is a price list, so the companies decide the price and the customers don't have any influence on this. Then there is the tiered pricing. So basically, there are different packages priced, different functionalities packed in different packages, and then the customer can basically decide on different level of service or the different functionalities. Then there is the subscription base, so basically monthly fee or annual fee, and then second degree discrimination. So they use some volume discounts or some other quality-based discounts and so on. And there, usually there was free trial version as well. So the customers, they could just test the service before they bought it. And there are some rarely used pricing aspects that were not visible. So pay what you want, that was not really visible. Then the auction pricing, exogenous pricing, per unit rates with the ceiling and first degree discrimination. So that is about giving the same service for different price for different customers. They were not used. Then there are some results from a survey that how the Finnish software industry changed after the emergence of cloud computing. And what is found is that software as a service firms, they generally simplified their pricing models. They used the usage-based pricing more. Then they standardized their value proposition and also the customer's influence. So they had standardized value offerings with standard prices. So the customers didn't really have so much influence on the prices like before. And then they unified their pricing across the customers. So they offered the same value proposition with the same price for all of the customers. But on the other hand, they didn't shorten the length of the contracts with their customers. So this means that they have to think about long-term revenues that will and to survive in this market. And the multi-tenancy was the most influential factor from the cloud computing technologies when we are speaking about these changes. So in case the company implemented the multi-tenancy or adopted the multi-tenancy, then it required changes also to the pricing model. But in case it didn't, then the pricing model was the same. Then there is another research. This is something new. We have it is still going on research, so research in programs. It's a multi-case study. We have 5 case firms, and they have basically 4 of them. They provide digital platform, and one is more like a software for banks. The first one, and what we can see about the revenue models, they have usually software renting. So they have the subscription-based revenue model, and they have the initial project fee because of customization work and integration work to the customer's already existing systems. But then they are still searching what is the best pricing model. And what can be seen that most of them, they say that, okay, the price depends on the size of the customer. But on the operational level, it's very difficult to say that how can you measure the size of the customer, because if it's about banks, basically it turned out that it's not enough how big the bank is. So basically that, for example, how many employees it has. But what was very important for this special case firm is that how many employees there are in this asset and liability management team that will use their software. And then on the other hand, for example, size of the company, of the customer, can be operationalized to a number of annual visitors if we are speaking about museums. So it's very difficult, even though it's very very easy to say that, okay, probably the price depends on the customer size, but when we go down to the operational level, it's very difficult to say that what is that factor that really matters regarding this digital goods and good and service, or the number of users, for example, or the number of customers' products. So there are different solutions for this. And what we can see that value-based pricing is the most used pricing model. So how companies develop their pricing model? It's not easy. It's we have some interesting results. For example, the first one, we tried to find the maximum price that a customer is willing to pay. When we started, we were just happy if someone paid something. Our first license fees in Finland were around X euros. It was money. We were happy. But however, later we realized that our revenue in Finland was too small, and we expanded to Sweden. We added simply some digits in the end of the price. We checked, and it went through. So basically, they just multiplied the price with 10 or 100, and it went through. So basically, this kind of it's not easy to quantify that how much the customers are willing to pay. It's really different than pricing something like a shoe or some tangible good, because you have to really know your customers, that how and your offering, that how that offering will bring benefits to them. Then the second one, they just started to develop tools and analyze systematically the market data, customer data, and then they just packaged the product. And they basically, what was important for them to identify the customer segments. So what kind of customers they have and what they want. So what kind of packages they should have. Then we can see that the value-based pricing strategy is the most used strategy, because, for example, the first one, the price has been set as high as could. Then we calculated that this is still feasible from our side if we have these and these many customers. So basically, you just try to figure out that how much the customer is willing to pay, and then you calculate that, okay, is this still okay price for you? So are your costs be returned? And then decide on price based on these considerations. Then the second quotation is about a new company. So basically they are still searching their revenue models. It turned out that some old revenue models didn't work, so they just had to have different pricing model for different target industries. And then the last one is about competitors. It's about taking competitors also into account, and then also the cost, so how much effort it takes to develop. But at the end of the day, there is the price that the customers are able to pay, and this was the most important. So cost-based pricing is not working in this context anymore, or only cost-based pricing. So what kind of strategies companies might have to find the right pricing model? Well, nothing new. Learning by doing, trial and error, and iterative cycles. They can just try something out, and if it's not working, they should learn from it. And do everything again and again. So it's really not the same like in other industries where the pricing is already, it has already the mechanisms and everybody knows how to do it. There are different pricing activities that a firm can have when they price their digital good and service. This can be grouped in two different categories. So there are the operational tasks. These are basically kind of straightforward or easier tasks, like analysis of the customer needs, analysis of customer willingness to pay. They have to analyze the competitive advantages and the competitor price levels. They can do some cost and profitability analysis. And then there is also the negotiation and the explaining the prices to the customers. But then the companies should have some coordinating activities. So these are just part tasks that the company has. But then they have to determine and adjust the pricing strategy, the pricing policy. And then when they have the pricing strategy, that has to be translated into a quantifiable amount like the price. And then in the long term, they have to develop some kind of pricing process capabilities internally and vis-a-vis customers. So what I mean here is that basically they have to know when there is a new change in the, there is some change in the value proposition, then everybody should know what to do. Okay, you have to, for example, one person has to analyze the customer needs again, or the second person has to run the cost and profitability analysis again, and who will decide what. So there has to be some kind of routines in the companies, in the company, to answer this kind of changes. Or in case there are a new service, then it's again new challenges. So what kind of resources are important for pricing? One of them, which is in case of we are speaking about digital goods and services, so technical skills are very, very important. He has developed so much. This is some quotation from interview from a company. And he is speaking about one employee. So technical skills, this kind of person, he is kind of a data native who was born with computer in hand, generation who knows the technology. And then he learned the risk and balance management through customer cases, and now he is our diamond. So he can basically estimate that which cases are easy and which have some risks, and that has to be considered when price in the price as well. The other skill that is important is the poker eye, because we were speaking about willingness to pay. So it is important to know when customers are bluffing and that this is too expensive. So customers are playing also a game. You have to know when they speak the truth and they are not able to pay that money, or they are just bluffing. Then there is the market sensitivity. You have to know your market and understand it. That is essential. And then the analytical skills, so are also important. So some of these case companies, they just calculated that if the customer's turnover is this much, then they can afford, for example, 30% from it for IT acquisitions. So this is the maximum amount they are able to pay for us. So this kind of analytical skills are also needed. Then not only knowledge and skills are needed, but also it's important to invest in building trusted relationships, also with customers, with potential customers, with partner companies, and also with competitors. So customers are important, usually because of direct feedback, what is good, what is not good, what is too expensive, what is cheap. But on the other hand, also the partner companies are important because they might have some knowledge what your company doesn't have. So for example, one case company, they were operating also in a different country, so they couldn't do the pricing here, but their partner company did it. So they are very important to have trusted relationships with the partner companies so that they help you out when you need. And then usually these case companies, they had their own pricing tool in the end. So usually this is just a list of the functionalities that you can just check that, okay, the customer wants this, this, and this, and then you multiply it with some number based on the size of the customer or something else. This is very important for the customer that they really see that how their price is calculated. So what in case they would like to have a different agreement, then how much extra fee does it cost for them, and so on. This kind of transparency is good for both the providers and the customers. This is some summary table that what kind of resources are needed for pricing in a company. So we were speaking about knowledges, skills, expertise, and then different kind of attitude and commitment. So for example, risk-taking attitude is important as well. Then the relationships, also inside the company and also outside the company. And then there are the materials. So you might need some market material, and the companies might even invest in it. So they pay, for example, for different data, for different statistics, what are important in case you really need them for pricing. That is very important. So different kind of revenue management systems, diagrams, tools, market materials. And then, of course, the budget of the company, and then also the business strategy and so on. These kind of tangible resources are needed for pricing. This is some kind of very simplistic way on how the price could be decided. This is just in case we are speaking about smaller firms, so not this kind of international big companies who have already the all different kind of policies and bureaucracy and departments, but like small or medium-sized firms that they want to decide on price. So they have to develop the pricing model somehow, then quantify this pricing model into price, and then they have to negotiate with customers. And these activities, they are interrelated. And you need different kind of resources for that, like technical skills, market knowledge, analytical skills, negotiation skills. And then you have the network resources, and then you have the tangible resources like the IT infrastructure, budget, business plan. And in the end, you have to come up with a price. So you do this iteratively, you learn from your experiences, and you, in the end, you price your service. So this is kind of an example workflow of pricing process for pricing model development. When you try to develop your own pricing model first time, you identify the customer segments, then determine the factors that determine the magnitude of benefits for the customers, and decide then later on the details. We had this big tool where we had all different kind of aspects, for example, the length of the contract, the bundling, the versioning, the discounts, the possible usage-based pricing components, and so on. And then after you have the pricing model, the pricing logic, then you just quantify this pricing model into price. So you put a price tag on each of these. And for this, you really need to estimate the how much benefit the customers will have due to your service and how much they are able to and willing to pay. And you should perform also cost and profitability analysis. You don't sell anything under the price, and analyze the competitors' prices. And then, of course, it's very important that you communicate with possible customers and with customers as well, so you get the direct feedback and you make changes based on that. As a summary, pricing cannot be done solely by one employee, but it needs a team with different skills and expertise. So because we really need different kind of knowledge, skills, and so on, we usually it's one employee is not enough, but you really have to have a team for it. So you have to invest in hiring the right individuals, in developing the processes and routines, and the IT infrastructure has to be developed. And then usually you need also some market data, and you have to invest also in building good customer and partner relationships. And what is really advisable is that you, in the end, you would have your own pricing tool, which can be very simple, only an Excel or something, but still it's very important for customers and for you as well that your service or your digital good and service is priced in a transparent way. And also the software architecture is important, so pricing-related decisions should be made early enough in the software development lifecycle. It has to be communicated to other employees. So, for example, if we are speaking about usage-based pricing, then you need some kind of components in the software architecture that measure that how much the customers use this service. Otherwise, you can't bill them. You can make the billing based on the usage of the customers. Or, for example, in many cases, the software architecture enables or limits different pricing options. For example, if there is the level of modularity, so how tight the components of the software are. If in case the level of the modularity is low, so the basically you can't make different versions of the software easily, then you can't price it separately. So you can't put in a different packages, different functionalities if the software architecture limits these. So it does not allow to do it. So that's why the pricing has to be communicated early enough in the software development lifecycle, so that all the people in your company knows that what is your intention regarding the pricing. Then there are the skills that are resources that are important in pricing of digital goods and services, and most of that and technical skills are something which is really special for this digital goods and services industry. And then, of course, building an ecosystem around the company's technology has long-term benefits also related to pricing. So if you are able to build a whole ecosystem, lots of different actors around your own technology, who use your own technology, then of course this has a positive impact also on the pricing possibilities. Yes, the second topic related to the digital firms is related to the growing data volume. So nowadays all the organizations, they have lots of data that has to be stored somewhere. And there are, these firms have different possibilities. In this figure you can see that the storage needs are growing. This is an exponential curve. It is from last year, and it is estimated that by 2025, the amount of data will be 160 zettabytes. That is huge. So basically, we are having more and more data every day that has to be stored somewhere. So what kind of alternatives firms have when they want to store their data? Of course, they can have their own data center. This can be called private cloud solution. In this case, they build, they buy the server, they buy the facilities, they buy the, they build their own solution, and then after that, they manage it all the time. So you need IT personnel for it. You have to estimate your future demand all the time, that how much storage needs you have. And in case you don't have enough storage capacity, then you have to buy some additional resources and so on. This is one option. Then the other option is just buy the storage capacity or the storage alternative solution from the public cloud services. There are different solutions like Amazon, Apple, or even Azure, Boxcom. In this case, you just pay only for the resources you actually use. So you don't pay an extra fee for additional resources. As compared to the private cloud solution, it's you usually have a lot of extra space that is not used now, but it will be used in 2 weeks. And you have to pay for it because it also has the electricity costs and so on. And also the salaries of the IT personnel that they manage these kind of data centers and so on. But with public cloud services, you have the flexibility that, okay, today I need this much and tomorrow I will need 1 giga extra. But on the other hand, they charge for this flexibility an extra fee. So it's more expensive than the unit price of the private solution. And then, of course, as a third option, you might use the hybrid cloud solution. This means that you use the private and public cloud infrastructure resources in parallel, so both of them. And this is working when, for example, you have a steady amount of resources that you need, but then sometimes you have some peak time when you need more. And then that part you can serve with the public resources. So in this case, when you use both the private solution and the public solution, then we are speaking about hybrid. So when a company decides that which one is the suitable for them, then there are really different things what have to be considered. So for example, that what are the requirements regarding the data availability? So how available the data has to be? Because usually, if we are speaking about data that it has to be used like all the time in the company, then putting it somewhere far away, it may have some implications regarding the how fast the data will be available for the employees and so on. Then there are the elasticity, the data security and privacy, confidentiality. So basically, you might, in case you have some really confidential documents or data that you don't want to be stored anywhere else. Using the public cloud services is really not an option because with them you don't know that where your data is stored. Of course, there is the service level agreement when they can assure you that your data won't get anywhere else than it's supposed to be. But on the other hand, you might have some critical data that you really want to take care about yourself. And in that case, it's just very simple to make a decision that where to store your data. Then there are the regulatory requirements. So some industries might have some new regulations, for example, legal regulations that, for example, the data of Finnish patients can't be stored anywhere else than Finland. And then you have to find some solution for storage in Finland. Then there are the reliability. Reliability, so how reliable the service is, so how sure I can be that the data what I store will be available for me. Then there are the performance issues, so how what is the level of performance of this service. Then you might have some legacy services or legacy systems in your company that you have to integrate with. So, for example, if you have already existing databases that are used and that data has to be integrated with some new data, then you have to consider that what kind of problems this might have. Then there are the personal preference. So some managers, they just say that, okay, I like only Microsoft Windows Azure, and then that's it. And some companies, they just say that, no, I want my data in this facility. So there can be some personal preference over one or the other solution. And then the added values. So we are speaking about storage, but there can be some additional services that, for example, public cloud services can provide. So for example, the requirements of they can do backup, or they can do other things. They can provide other services, and these might have some added values as compared to your own solution. But at the end, if none of these are such that based on that requirement you can decide on something, then the cost is something that you always have to consider. You can't avoid that the cost is not calculated in advance, that how much does it cost to store the same amount of data in different solutions. So how can we decide that what is the total cost of the storage solutions? Well, first we can, when we want to compare these kind of solutions, we have some cost factors related to in-house resources. This means the cost of a data center, basically. You have the servers, you have the software on top of it, you have the IT personnel, the salaries, you have the electricity bill, you have the premises, you have to pay rent or something, and so on. Then there are the cost factors related to public resources. This depends mostly on the pricing model of the public cloud providers. So you have, of course, the storage cost, storage resources cost, then the you have also some additional like load balancing or some computational resources if you want, or then there are the data communication costs and so on. Then if we are speaking about hybrid costs, or even if we are speaking about public cloud, there is some interaction between the private and public cloud and the use of private and public cloud concurrently. So when we are speaking about hybrid cloud, for example, you have resource provisioning. You have to just migrate some of your stuff to the public cloud, and this has a cost as well. Then there are cost factors related to, and of course, the data communication costs. So the data transfer costs. So transferring the data from the public cloud to your employee's computer, it has a cost. Then cost factors related to the organizational, environmental, or system context. The organizational context, so this here belong all different kind of cost factors related to the system's size, or the software architecture, or different kind of organizational practices, and so on. And then we have the legal costs, and all the costs of the meetings on the decision on which storage solution should be used. Then migrating all the data somewhere, this has a cost, and integrating the solution to your own services, already existing services, that has a cost as well. So there are really really different type of considerations that have to be calculated. Now I will tell about some results regarding this kind of research, where we basically compared cost of private and public cloud storage. So in case of storage, which solution is more cost-effective? So the storage cost is really different from the computational cost, because with the computational resources, you have fluctuating demand. So for example, during the day, you need even more computational resource than during the night when everybody is sleeping. But with the storage, it's different, because storage needs are increasing all the time. So is it cheaper to use a public cloud solution, or is it cheaper to use just private storage when you have all the time an increasing storage need? And that is something that is a trade-off between the higher unit price in case of public storage and acquiring excess capacity in private storage. So basically what here have to be decided is that, do you want to pay a more expensive price for these public resources, or you want to pay also for some unused resources in case of private cloud? Because there is always, if you want to make sure that you will have enough storage resources for the next week, then you always have to have some extra capacity which is not used now. Regarding the hybrid cloud, there are a couple of key questions that have to be thought about. One is that to find the cost optimal mix of internal and external sourcing. So what should we put to the public cloud, and what we should put to the private cloud? What are those parts of the data that we can just migrate to the public cloud? And how much should we put there? And how much should we store inside? And then there are different questions related to this. So are we able to predict how much volume we will need in the future or not? And do we have any seasonal fluctuations? So do we know that, for example, Christmas time we will have, 10 giga more than usually. And this research was about these kind of factors determining the more economical alternative. We had the previous slide where we had the really different type of cost factors that influence the total cost, but show that one factor has an impact and what kind of impact it has, you have to somehow limit the number of factors in order to have any result. And in this research, we just had the price, that how much the public cloud infrastructure is charged for, then the charging period for the public storage, and the acquisition interval for the private storage. So what we mean acquisition interval is the time period when the company reassesses its storage needs and then acquires additional capacities if needed, additional resources if needed. So this interval basically describes the time period. For example, it can be 6 months or 1 year, that okay, and now I will estimate that in the next 6 months I will need this and this much storage resource, and then I will buy these additional resources, like for example server or any other things now. And then the next time when I check this, it's 6 months, or is it one year? So this is the acquisition interval. And then there is the intensity of the data communications that have a huge impact on the costs. And then how predictable the growth of the storage needs are. So do I know that how much storage I will need later? So basically, this research can be simplified to these two options. In case of private storage, we have the acquisition interval, which is like 6 months or 1 year or whatever. But anyway, it's much longer than the charging interval for the public storage, because the public storage usually, for example, in Amazon, they are 12 hours. So you have to inform them in 12 hours that, okay, I want 1 giga more than before. But in case of private storage, this is months or years. And then you estimate your future demand, and you pay also for unused capacity, because you really want to make sure that your private storage resources are available and can be used. And with the public storage, you pay only for the used resources, and then you have the flexibility, so you can just say that how much resources you need in a very short time. But then, on the other hand, the providers charge a premium price for this. Related to the hybrid cloud, where we have two different options. We can calculate the hybrid storage cost when the storage demand is estimated rarely. And we can calculate the hybrid storage cost when the storage demand is estimated more often. So the first picture is about, for example, 1 year. If one company estimates that how much storage it needs in the next year, and the second picture is about 6 months. So the company basically estimates 2 times a year that how much storage it needs. And then these gray parts, they are served with more expensive public resources. And then these rectangulars are served with the in-house resources. And the question is that which is the cheapest? Is it cheaper that you just estimate your storage needs in every year, once a year, or is it cheaper when you estimate it 2 times a year? But we found that in case that the storage demand is growing very fast, so you really have an increasing amount of data that you need to store somewhere, then if you have shorter acquisition intervals, then the private solution might be cheaper than the public solution. So basically, this means that organizations that are able to shorten this interval, that they can, for example, in every 6 months, they can just reestimate their storage needs and acquire additional capacities, then basically they can reduce the cost of the private storage as compared to the public storage. And regarding the data transfer costs, they may make the private storage more expensive. So in case you have a lot of data transfer going on, then you might think about a public solution that could be the most cost effective. And then we have some results also regarding the utility premium. Of course, if the price of the public storage capacity is more expensive, then of course the private solution will be cheaper. Then regarding the storage redundancy, so in case you want to be sure that your data is available, you want to store it redundantly, so more than one time, then of course this will increase the costs. Of course, the estimation error, so how well you can estimate that how much storage needs you will have, these also have an effect on the total cost. Then regarding the hybrid storage, it's again, if you are able to shorten the acquisition interval, then you might reduce the cost of hybrid cloud storage because of it. Because choosing the hybrid cloud alternative is not only about costs. There are some options when you really can't see any other alternative than just using a hybrid cloud, because there are some old legacy systems that you are not able to migrate to the public cloud and so on. So some companies for some companies it's important to know that how the cost of hybrid storage can be decreased. And one way of this is that they can shorten this acquisition interval, so they can just reestimate their storage needs more often. And in one simulation study, we found that basically one company, it was the University of Oxford, that had the storage data. And if they would have switched to the 6 months period instead of the annual acquisition cycle, then they would have had like 15% of cost reduction. So it's a lot of money if we are speaking about a huge data to be stored. And then the costs decrease further if shortening the acquisition cycle reduces the volume uncertainty. So of course, if you re-estimate your storage needs only for the next 6 months, then you are able to predict your storage needs maybe more accurately, more precisely than for the whole year. So this will be so this decreases the total costs even more. Thank you very much. This was my my lecture. Please comment and ask. Then thank you very much.